Hi, everybody. It's March 4th, 2021. Regardless of the date, my name's Larry Jacobs, and this is 3K12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening today. As you know, we're part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, where we publish our online journal, which is called Equity in Access, which is absolutely terrific magazine for pre-K-12 educators. Okay, all about equity and access. In fact, we're the only ones that focus on that 100%. You'll enjoy it. It's great. It's easy to read. It's online over at ace-ed.org. All our podcasts are over there, and as you poke around the website, you'll see a lot of information. We invite you to join our consortium for equity. Obviously, it's free for educators. Everything we do over there is free. The more the merrier over at ace-ed.org. We found new friends through the magazine. One of their one of their directors of communication, Marisol, is the director of communications over at the National Parents Union. So we found out about the National Parents Union, and we invited them on the show, okay, via our friend Marisol. We got Judith Yanez. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Judith, and Nehemiah Frank here today to talk about the role, what it is, of the National Parents Union, because parents are so involved in education, quite obviously, and it's always an equity and access thing, as well as learning and teaching. It's a difficult year, so let's find out what's going on, and we'll start off with a good morning to Ms. Judith Yanez. How you doing, Judith? It's Larry here.
Hey, Larry, good morning, and I'm reclaiming my name, so it's Judith Yanez. You know, it was just my name was assimilated as I went through the K-12 education system. I'm like, you know, our kids deserve identity and culture. So Judith Yanez here, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Oh, Judith, it's my pleasure, for goodness sakes. Thank you for that little correction there. And I was going to go back. I got to tell you, it was funny. As I was reading your name late yesterday, preparing for the show, I was going to go back to my old Castilian Spanish in high school. So say it again so everybody gets it.
Here we go. Judith Yanez.
Judith Yanez.
There you go, Larry. Good job.
Thanks, pal. Appreciate it. Judith. You like Judith?
I do. That's what I'm going to call it. We're going to stick
beautiful
with that.
Beautiful. I love it. That's great. And we're going to find out not only your work with NPU, the National Parents Union. I'll introduce Nehemiah, too. But then you're also the founding executive director of something that's nice. I was on the website called, it looks like Rooted, R-O-O-T, capital E-D, Root Ed, up in Northwest, or down, I should say. I'm in Maine in Northwest Arkansas. Let me introduce Nehemiah, which I know I'm pronouncing right. Is that correct, Nehemiah? Are you there? Are you got your phone on mute? Nehemiah.
Hello, can you hear me?
There you are. There I got you. There you are. How you doing?
Thank you so much for having us on today.
Oh, my pleasure indeed, my friend. Okay, did you have your phone on mute a minute ago or what?
Yeah, I was trying to use the microphone through the car, and I guess it wasn't working, so I just decided to go the old-fashioned way and come off speaker.
There you go. Well, it's good. It's good. Good you're here. And I'm going to start with Nehemiah here because, besides being a Southern Region delegate to the National Parents Union, that's who we're doing the show with. You are. I looked this up. I'm on the website. You are founder and editor in chief of something called the Black Wall Street Times, and I looked it up. And I think it's a website. Okay, but it doesn't have anything to do perhaps with Wall Street per se, but it is very interesting, and it also, you can describe what it is for folks and give the website, etc. And also, there was a section of it called Greenwood News, and I don't know where Greenwood is, so just talk about what the Black Wall Street Times is before we get into the NPU. Go ahead, Nehemiah.
Yeah, so the Black Wall Street Times is a news publication. We believe that access is the new civil right. We're based out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is home to the original Black Wall Street, Black Wall Street Greenwood District. It was destroyed in 1921 by
I know that story. Beyond belief. I know that story well down in Tulsa, which is one of the worst things in American history, I got to tell you, when you really look at that. It destroyed an incredibly thriving African-American neighborhood, okay, down there in Tulsa. But I didn't realize that was the Greenwood section, and that's what you were talking about. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Cool, right? So that's great. And how long have you been doing it? How long have you been editor-in-chief?
Yeah, so I founded as a company in December of 2016. We started publishing in February of 2017, so we've been around for a little while.
Wow, good for you, man. That is just great. Thank you for this. We're doing what you do every day. I really appreciate it. Tell us about your organization, Judith, Root Ed, or I don't know how you like to pronounce that. It looks like rooted, but it can be Root Ed, Northwest Arkansas.
Yes, Larry, thank you for that. It's Root Ed, and it's Roots in Education. And so I primarily work with the most vulnerable in our community, the Latinx community, the unengaged, the ones surviving to feed their families and house their families. And so when we think about high-quality education, I founded this organization 3 years ago, and walking with the journeys of parents, I determined high-quality education does not exist unless families are rooted in community, rooted in their value systems as families, and then we can start beginning talking about how they're rooted in education. But unless their culture, their identity is rooted, I don't think people can have a bright future without knowing who they are and where they came from. So it's been a pleasure. We started with education options, but we knew that was not enough. And so we really walked with the journeys of these families to understand why they were not engaged or had a voice in their child's education. So we're still in we hired a psychologist now that is helping us teach and write the history of our work to be able to have it in a researchable format that could help education systems and families be further engaged in their child's life and education.
That's interesting, and I want you to explain a little further because I love what you said. I'm an old history teacher. Okay, what you said about knowing where you've been, so to speak, knowing your roots, if I may. Okay, and using that to know where you are going. Can you just expound on that a minute? I love that.
Definitely. So, Larry, both Amaya and I are Southern Region delegates, and so in the Southern Region, we're farther away from the borders. I'm going to use Mexico, for example. So if you're in California, your roots, your identity as a student are alive in the city, in schools, teachers look like you. You're able to connect with those roots, even though your parents might not be engaged in your education. So the further you go to the central United States, you don't have those border towns where we have to force our students to assimilate to a culture that's not theirs. Identity and culture play a huge role in defining who students are and defining the roots their family gives them to move further within their identity and culture.
That's actually a very good explanation. I really like that. I appreciate that, Judith. That's really cool. Okay. And I just want to keep asking you, Northwest Arkansas, I live in Maine. Okay. What towns are we talking about in Northwest Arkansas? Kind of put that on the map for folks so they can hear a town that they might be familiar with.
Maybe I could say a headquarter, Walmart. Walmart is our headquarter in Northwest Arkansas.
Bentonville, right.
Springdale, yep. Yep, right. We're here. That's
Got
Northwest
it.
Arkansas
Got
for
it.
You.
I said Fayetteville. That's North Carolina. I meant Bensonville. Okay. Thank you. Now I got it. That's kind of a thriving area, and I'm glad that you're working on all this. This is good stuff. So, all right, both of you, you're both down there in the South, okay, down in Oklahoma and Arkansas. How did you link up? And Nehemiah, I'm going to ask you, how did you get involved with the National Parents Union? Okay, you're editor-in-chief of an African-American, a journal. Okay, how did you get involved with the Parents Union and why? Nehemiah.
So before I founded the Black Wall Street Times, I, too, was a teacher. I was a full-time teacher at a Title I school in Tulsa. And I also was an assistant principal for 1 year. And, you know, just seeing what parents have gone through and how they really didn't have a voice, especially when it came to the public education in Tulsa. I wanted to be that advocate. To be honest with you, I actually started in a charter school, And I was, even as a charter school teacher and a charter school assistant principal, I would still go to the public schools school board meetings and advocate for those kids too, because you know we care about all children,
right?
And all families. And when it came to lower income parents advocating for themselves, it seemed like they were less likely to, you know, really be taken serious when they had concerns about their kids' education.
Wow.
And so that's how I got involved. Yep.
Yeah, you know, usually that's an interesting statement you just made, okay? That's a sad statement you just made, that they were not being taken seriously, okay? I usually hear it the other way, that the school districts want those parents more involved and they really want to listen. That's what I usually hear. You just said the exact opposite, which is not good. We got to make sure that doesn't happen. They have to be taken seriously. These people, these kids matter. Okay? It's that simple.
Right.
They need a voice.
And low.
All right?
Yeah, and like low-income parents and parents of color, like they generally aren't taken. And when I say low-income parents, that includes poor white parents as well. Like they're not taken serious.
Wow. Wow, you found that's a, wow, that's incredible. What do you find, Judith, up in Northwest Arkansas?
I'm sorry, Larry, I missed the question.
Judith, I asked you, what are you finding? I assume you just heard the Himalayas comment. Were you able to hear that?
Yes, definitely. So, like I said,
talk about that comment in regards to where you are. Yeah, this is really fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, definitely. So, I primarily work with Latinx families that are not engaged in their child's education. And what we're finding is, you know, school buildings are barriers to parents because they don't know how to engage. And, you know, being a teacher, I'm going to give this example. When we're working inside of schools, we know the politics, we know the rules of engagement, we know the administrators that we can't talk to, we know the teachers they can't talk, you know, we can't communicate with. You know, we know those rules to engage within a school. Parents don't. So when they show up not knowing those rules, they're going to be treated a different way because they know no other way. And depending on who they get, they're going to be shut down. And so that's what we're finding in this area. Not having many educators that resemble, you know, their identity, they don't know how to treat these parents. And so there's a cultural barrier that exists. And like Nehemiah said, this is not just in the Latinx. We have a large population of Marshallese families here. We're like the primary in the United States with the larger population. We have Asian families, we have poor white families, right? We don't know these rules of engagement. And so that causes families to shut down and not be engaged in their child's education.
Right, which is not good. And I'll stay with you, Judith. Are you finding, okay, that the school, and you must talk to the school districts all the time. I hope you are. Okay, tell me if you're not, but I assume you are. Are they, how are they reaching out to make this better? Because I've done a lot of podcasts recently, okay, with school districts who are really making a tremendous effort, especially for young families, kids in preschool, to reach out for family engagement at a very, very early age for these kids, okay, so that the families feel comfortable with the school districts, okay. What are you finding, okay, in Northwest Arkansas?
Yeah, thank you, Larry, for that question. So I primarily work outside of schools with parents to build their voice and their power to know how to navigate any school system. So if they move out of this area, they're able to navigate any system within the U.S. So that's my primary focus, because usually we engage families with one school and they know those rules, but then they move to another school and they don't. So that's one thing, right, Larry? Then the other thing is, because it's parent power, to ensure that. So and the other thing, Larry, I work with education options. So I get to hear why parents decide to move out of school districts. And so, and the sad part, Larry, I have not had one school approach me to understand why parents are moving. And that's sad. Does it become my job to now approach schools, or should they engage with me to, you know, figure out how to best support families?
All of a sudden, Judith. All of a sudden, I'm starting to get feedback. Do you have an extra mic on or something? I'm getting like a feedback sound as you're talking, and I want people to understand you.
Okay, can you hear me now, Larry?
Much better. Thank you, my dear. Go ahead. Say it again.
Thank you.
Say what you just said.
Definitely, definitely. So I, working in the realm of education options, I get to hear why parents get to move out of districts. You know, their reasons to want to move, what is causing the discomfort for them not no longer to feel safe in a school. But I've never had a school district or an administrator approach me and ask me, why are parents choosing to leave? Because within that information lies of how we need to support parents best in schools. Right? We're not saying one school district or one type of school is better than the other, but families are not feeling safe within those walls. And so,
that,
so to answer your question, us as an organization are not being approached because now we're seen as a charter school. You know, we're taking kids out of schools, but that's not the case. Families are not feeling safe. And
people
so
have to feel safe.
How do we use that information, you know, or districts use that information?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting piece. It's an interesting piece because I hate to break it down to this because there's more to it than that. But there's an economic piece to this, to the school districts. When they lose a student, they lose the money that tracks with that student, all right? And it goes somewhere else, all right? And they have to be aware that they're – there was an economic price to pay for their lack of reaching out and changing things, et cetera, if in fact that's the case. There has to be a meeting of the minds on this because no school district wants to lose kids. Because when you lose kids, you lose money, and it shouldn't boil down to economics, but that's just one factor in there that really, really matters. It's really interesting. So let me swing this on a more national basis. Okay, I'll go over to Nehemiah now, down in Tulsa. Okay, Nehemiah, all right. How did you find out about the National Parents Union? Okay, and are you finding that the things you're discovering, okay, for kids in who have needs, okay, down in Tulsa is reflective across the whole country as you work with your friends at the NPU?
Yeah, so the first part to the question is when I founded the Black Wall Street Times, I was doing a lot of heavy reporting and writing around education, you know, the disparities between black and brown children versus white and Asian children is astronomical. You know, here we are, how many years after Brown versus Board of Education, and we're still seeing these wide gaps. Even in this modern era with, you know, all of this technology, we're still having these issues.
It's unbelievable. We're all about equity and access here. Okay. And it's beyond belief. And it was beyond, I have to say this, it was beyond belief, obviously, before the pandemic. Okay. And the pandemic really opened up the floodgates. Okay. And showed how this is just nuts. And in answer to your question, I think it's about 66 years since Brown versus Board of Education, I think. Am I right? That's enough time.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Two whole generations. Imagine that.
Jeez. I don't have to imagine. I live it. Right.
Right.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable when you think about it how nuts it is, and we see this, okay. And actually, let me ask that. I want to ask you again. So you talk to people all over the country. You're a delegate from the southern region of the National Parents Union. So other areas, you know, all the other regions of the NPU. What are you hearing from your friends? Is this a southern thing? You guys are southern region delegates, or is this a national thing that you're hearing for parents?
It is absolutely a national issue, and it's reflective whether, you know, the city or the area leans heavily Democratic or heavily Republican. It doesn't matter. It's across the board. Economically, it's across the board. Like black children who are in, you know, higher or who are in the best school districts are still. You know, the majority of them are still behind. Like you look at a county like Fairfax County, Virginia, you know, those black children are definitely in a better school. You know, they're definitely better positioned, right? Because they have more access as far as educational opportunities and high quality teachers. Nevertheless, they're still behind, the majority of them are still behind their white and Asian counterparts.
Okay, and let me carry that further, and I'm going to ask you this, okay? Why do you think they are still behind, even though, let's use Fairfax, those kids have pretty good access, okay? What's your thought on that?
Right. I think a lot of it has to do with the culture, but there is research that says that, you know, if a black child has a teacher, a black teacher by the third grade, that they're 36% more likely to graduate and attend college.
Wow, I never heard that before.
So,
that's incredible. That's great.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Right. And so, you know, the goal here is that the goal that public education should really be invested in is creating better pathways for black and brown parents to black and brown teachers to enter the classroom.
I agree.
That would make a huge difference in you know, education outcomes for our students.
Yeah, boy, I got to say, I agree with you 100% on that. That's one of the things that has always made me crazy, okay? Because, and let's not carry this too far, but for first-generation college students, teaching has always been a way into the professions, all right? That is not happening right now. And I always lament the facts. I do a lot of shows about the lack of black and brown teachers, okay? And I got to tell you, we got to push that. We've been trying to push that for years. Your point is very, very well taken. Okay? Very, very well taken. All right? What can I say on that? So what is NPU doing? Okay? Judith, let's go back to you. What's NPU doing, okay, to make things better?
Yeah. Right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, don't. No, I have to tell you something. Dogs are always welcome on Education Talk Radio. Okay, so don't worry about that. What is the dog's name?
His name is Oreo, and it's so funny. It happens every time. Does not miss a beat at all. It's amazing.
All right, tell Oreo Uncle Larry says hello. Give him a cookie. Don't worry about it. Dogs are allowed to bark. Okay.
Yeah, I think thank you so much, Larry, for that. I don't need to apologize, you know, kind of like children during the pandemic.
You don't have
right
to apologize,
now.
Believe me, okay, believe me, just no problem. Tell Oreo I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Oreo,
you're
Larry
welcome.
Says hi.
Yeah.
But no, thank you so much. Back to the question, Larry. I think what I love about NPU we are polling parents. We are understanding what they're thinking, what they're feeling, to be able to, whatever decision we make, be grounded in the voice of parents. And I think that's one of the marks that education system, that's why I love being a part of this, right? And so we can go through the polls if you want now or later on, but it's important because parents are the voice of children. And
right.
I, through this pandemic, was thinking, you know, when the school shut down, that education should have continued in the household. And so in what part did we fail families where parents can no longer pick up the baton and continue the education at home? And so through these polls, throughout this pandemic, we've been getting information directly from parents on how, like, our Bill of Rights, and Nehemiah can attest to this, what did parents need to educate their children at home based on their voice? So NPU does not go, we need this, without the backup of the parent voice.
Right.
I agree with you. I agree. Go ahead, Nehemiah. Go ahead. Shoot.
Yeah, and if I can just add to, like, what you're saying. So the Black Wall Street Times, our organization or company, we're partners with the National Parents Union. And so, you know, if there are any listeners out there that individually want to join NPU, you can join in NPU as an individual or you can join it as a partner organization. And I joined NPU because our values align. They're very intentional. At the Black Wall Street Times, access is the civil right, as I mentioned earlier. And NPU allows access for all parents. It's a free union that you can join, which is, you know, I've never even heard of that. But also, you know, they're intentional about uniting parents of color, low-income parents, special needs parents, single mothers, fathers, grandparents, including formerly incarcerated parents. Like, their NPU is literally creating resources for these parents to be better advocates for their kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why aren't they, okay, across the board, okay, I have to keep asking, what do these parents need to be better advocates? Okay, it's easier to say that. What do they need to be better advocates? Just instruction? I mean, every school district's different, okay? What do they need? Do they just need confidence? Do they need materials? What do they need? I'm going to ask Judith. Go ahead, my dear.
Yeah, no, this is a beautiful question to answer, Larry. I directly here on the ground in Arkansas, I will attest that our parents say that Rooted is a backbone. And, you know, I was able to learn more through being connected with National Parents Union and supporting parents, because now I have national partners that could help me support parents on the ground with more high-quality information that we can find in Arkansas. But we created an environment where this was not about an education. It was helping families feel safe. They had a voice, because these are families that never have had a voice or have been seen or have been respected or treated with dignity. So they come from traumatic environments that all they know is how to survive. And we feel, and all we want to do with parents is, like, we want you to be engaged in your child's education, but that's a barrier, and there's a lot of barriers they face. And so how do we break down those barriers? Psychology, we make people feel safe.
And you know, it's interesting. I have to say, there's also a cultural thing. People who come from the, I'll say, the Latin American, the more Hispanic, Latino cultures, the teachers are held up in a different light. The school district is more removed from the family, so to speak. Okay? Is it a cultural thing? You know what I'm saying. Okay? That people are just a little bit scared to approach a school district, which they should not be here, by the way. Okay? It's got to be a cultural thing.
So, in our Latin American countries, the teachers are fully trusted. So the child misbehaves, you're going to get in trouble when you get home. You know, the teacher is seen as a high authority. But when children are being failed and parents don't understand, you know, what environment is your child in, what is the specific shows of, you know, your child being failed through the system, that parents need to understand that. But when they don't understand their own oppression and their trauma and how they're surviving, it's hard for them to be engaged in a system they don't understand.
That's scary. I'll tell you, it really is, you know. Yeah, go ahead, Nehemiah. Go.
Yeah, and, you know, just to add to what, you know, Judith is saying, you said it's a cultural thing, but I mean, it is an American cultural problem, if you really think about it. Like, parents have to understand that they have permission to go to a school board and demand quality education. They need to know that they have permission to be able to go and you know, lobby their legislators, their elected officials, for better high quality education for their kids. Because a lot of them, they don't even know, you know, how that they even have permission to do those things.
Yeah, but
so
I have to ask you, when you're from a sophisticated city, okay, in Tulsa, okay, with sophisticated mm-hmm. people, okay, I mean, truly, I mean, they don't know what people don't know that. I find it hard to believe, and I'm not questioning you, obviously, just I'm asking to explain it, that the typical African-American person, okay, in a city like Tulsa, okay, doesn't know they can go right to that school board and ask them. Am I wrong? Am I off base here? Help me.
I really don't even understand what you're asking. Can you repeat that in another way?
Then I asked it wrong. I'm concerned. You're saying that the folks that you're dealing with don't understand, okay, that they can go to their school board and demand, okay, what they need. And I am saying, and that's why I want to be corrected if I'm wrong, that the folks, the typical African-American person, okay, who lives in Tulsa, is a very, to me, to my way of thinking, would be a very sophisticated person, okay, and should certainly know that by now. And I'm concerned what's holding them back, okay?
Right.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I might be totally off base here, okay? But I see the folks as different and far more sophisticated than the way I'm hearing it. They've got to take the bull by the horns, and they can make this. What's holding them back? These are sophisticated
right.
people.
And so, right. And so, you know, and I thank you for, you know, calling us sophisticated people. I appreciate that.
That's true.
You know, but we have, like, you have to look at history. You have to look at the fact that black and brown people have been marginalized. You know, there were laws.
Oh, I know that.
Right. And so there were laws that kept, you know, that subservient, you know, social, unspoken social reality that has, you know, and it's been passed from generation to generation. It, you know, it's an unconscious thing that all of us are dealing with. You know, we're fighting to get ourselves out of that. Out of that rut, and some of us, you know, are able to make it, but the majority of us are still finding our ways out of it. Some people call it woke culture. You know, there's a whole bunch of different, you know, phrases about that. But when it comes to, you know, black parents or brown parents or even low-income white parents advocating for their kids, you know, when they see folks on TV, they don't see themselves going to the school board and, you know, giving a statement about their opinions. We're starting to see that now, which is excellent. I think that, you know, the pandemic has definitely, you know, stimulated parent power because they can see in real time what is happening in their, you know, their children's classroom by simply watching them from, you know, the computer desk at home, you know, engaging with their teachers. And so, you know, NPU does a really great job at showing the parents that they have power within them to be able to be strong advocates for their kids.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, and I think, okay, that people like me, we assume that people are ready to do this, okay, and we don't see how the long-term implications of history are hurting the whole situation. They're not advocating because they just must be lazy or something, but no, it's not that. Okay? They're not advocating because they're scared to, because history has taught them they're going to get screwed if they do. Okay? And we've got, and you said it before about Brown versus Board of Education. It's been 65 years, for God's sakes. Okay? And you would think it would have changed completely 100% by now, but it hasn't. Okay, and that is really a long-term implication of history there. Okay, it's easy for me to say people have changed and they should advocate. Okay, but it's hard when you see it from through different eyes and from a different point of view. And actually, like what Judith said at the very beginning, from your own history. Okay, your own roots. Okay, you know, it's hard for me to understand those roots, okay? Hence, it's hard for a lot of – I'm not making excuses here. It's hard for a lot of school districts to understand those roots. So they're waiting for people to advocate. They don't advocate. They say the heck with it, okay? It's just,
right.
The two of you are actually – wow, that's really just amazing. You're right on target there. What do you think, Judith?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
You know, Larry, thank you for asking that question. I was like, where is Larry going with this, you know?
Yeah.
But I see where you went with it.
You see where I'm going here? Yeah.
I do. I one of the – how we fail is we don't understand – okay, I think, like, we have the administrators up here, the superintendents, the school board, and then we have teachers and parents that are on the ground working with students. And there's a disconnect right there. And I think you hit on what that disconnect is. We assume that, you know – we supposedly no longer have slavery, that people should be engaged, you know, what's wrong with them. But we don't step back to analyze why are they not connected. And there was a question I once asked someone. I said, go into the communities and understand why they don't trust these systems. Start talking to them at their level, build trust and respect. And the answer I got back, Larry, was that's a lot of work. Who's going to do that?
Oh, well.
That is the work that it takes. To fix our education system.
Wow.
Right. And so, like, yeah, like, we want, and, like, you know, not that the levels, you know, that, you know, parents from certain neighborhoods are at a lower level or at a higher level, but we want to meet them where they are.
Yeah.
Think about, like, civics classes, right?
Great point.
Civics needs a revamp. Like, we need to reimagine, you know, not only education, but we need to definitely reimagine how, you know, civics is taught in schools. Because a lot of us, you know, we come out of high school, out of college, and we don't know how to be great citizens to improve our society. And so one of the things that I really appreciate about NPU is that it has toolkits that will actually educate you on how to advocate, you know, via reading, you know, writing your local school board member or your state representative.
Bingo.
And it actually has templates, so it makes it super easy for them to be great advocates. It's a template. They're, you know, so well put together. They could literally put the bill number in and, you know, put their, you know, their concerns in there with, like, a main moderate message already crafted for them. But not only that, like, NPU is in every state. We are in Puerto Rico. And so there's parent
right.
advocates and parent groups all across the country that can actually work with one another to help them be, you know, strong in their regions.
Yeah, and what the parents have to be involved. And Judith, I got to tell you, okay, if a school district ever says that it's hard to do that, remind them that's their job. That's their job, okay? And the school districts, and I know school districts that spend so much time and money. I can tell you right now, a heavily Latino district in Washington State, which is called West Valley, okay, up in Allentown, PA, they work day and night, okay, to get families engaged, low-income families, new families, et cetera, in the schools early. Okay, there are districts that are doing it, and they shine as examples, but it needs to be done across the country, and that's what you guys are doing. And I love this conversation. We got to go, but I'll tell you guys are just doing great work. You should be proud of yourselves. Okay, you're both going to heaven.
Thank
well,
you, Larry. We're
so.
Proud of our parents.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are okay, I got to tell you. All right, keep up the good work. Keep the pressure on, all right, and keep those parents involved. Nehemiah, Judy, thank you. You guys are wonderful. Thanks a million.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Larry.
Oh, my pleasure indeed. Thank you. Take care. Stay safe down there, please, okay? And bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. And thank you, Oreo, the dog, for barking, by the way. That was a good conversation. I really enjoyed that. Those are great people. National Parents Union. I'm going to get the website here. NationalParentsUnion.org. NationalParentsUnion.org. That's easy enough. They got some great stuff on this website. It's really a good group, okay? And it's all about equity and access. That's what it's all about, okay? Who oversee what we're doing over at ace-ed.org. All right, thank you, Nehemiah. Thank you, Judith. Thank you, Marisol and everybody, and Colleen over at NPU. Okay, my name's Larry Jacobs. We're going to archive at ace-ed.org. Everybody stay safe, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow, okay? Thanks for listening.